When it comes down to that pressure cooker, when it comes down to that sifting of the dross in their life, purging the crap out of their life, whether it's sin, whether it's intellectual worldviews, it doesn't matter what it is, it's getting purged. They just don't want that. They don't understand that just like Jesus, we learn obedience through suffering.
Welcome, everybody, to In the Shadow of the Cross. I am Lauren Rosser. I'm here once again with my two friends, Jim Durkin.
Hello.
And Michael Harden.
Hello.
The Dude of Theology. He originally had the name Dude of Theology on his screen. So today we want to talk about a light, fluffy topic. The Dark Night of the Soul. Dun, dun, dun. No, this is a really good topic. I've been looking forward to this one. We mentioned in the last podcast that we should talk about it, and I think it's a topic worth getting into. That season where everything seems bleak, hopeless, done. All I'm doing is breathing air in and out. That's why I exist, is just to breathe air in and out, and even that. To come up with a reason to keep doing that in that season can even become a real challenge. The Dark Night of the Soul. So what do we mean by the Dark Night of the Soul? Is this just, I had a bad day, or, you know, my car broke down, you know, or is it, oh man, I just lost my job. What do we mean by the Dark Night of the Soul?
Well, I think to everybody, it is different. But basically, for me, what we're talking about is when life has so knocked us down that everything we believe about our relationship with God and his ability to come through is being challenged at the very core of that belief. And that can be anything from death of a very close loved one to a divorce to a business failure. It takes on different forms, but it's the thing that challenges all of the things that we confess to believe in, you know, God is good all the time. You know, he only does wondrous things. It's like, and now they're being challenged. Were they platitudes, or are they something that's solidly deep in our heart and, scripture taken out of context, and I don't like it when people use it, but though he slay me, yet will I trust him kind of thing.
Wow. And I like how you described that, Jim, because I was thinking how, in the way you described it, a car breaking down can be part of a dark night of a soul. If you're in a situation where everything else is collapsing and you got to get to work that day and you're on your last thread and that car breaks down, that can be the catalyst that throws you into a dark night of the soul. Is where is God in this? How am I supposed to get to work? I can't feed my family. You know, so you're right. It's different for every person, but it is. I like that. Thinking of it as it's a thing that brings us to the end of our rope. You know, I think of it that way. You know, Michael, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, there are many fold. First, you've both identified. And Jim identified two ways in which the dark night of the soul is manifest. You both touched on the psychological, but Jim came in also with the spiritual component, Which I think might also, one could put in parenthesis, the intellectual component, but it's the deeper question. This doesn't make sense to me. Why do the wicked prosper? I mean, it's these great questions, Why is there evil in the world? What did I do? It's these large meta questions about everything now, including oneself in relation to whatever and whatever's relationship to you. So I thought that was real good. I had some curiosity pique me, and it's been a long time, long, long time. I read this text back in the early 90s, and it is The Dark Knight by Saint John of the Cross. Now, The Dark Knight is the exegesis of an eight stanza poem. Okay? And at the very beginning of this poem, he says, "In this book, we will first cite the entire poem, then each stanza will be repeated separately and explained. And finally, we will do the same thing with the individual verses. The first two stanzas proclaim the effects of two types of spiritual purgation. One, a purification of the sensory part, the other, a purification of the spiritual part. The remaining six stanzas proclaim some of the marvelous results which are obtained from the spiritual illumination and from the union with God through love." Now, I'll read you the poem in a second, but here's what's really, really important about the way John, say John of the Cross, is going to describe the dark night of the soul. He does it in the form of a model of spirituality that came out of the Catholic Church. Very, very specifically with Saint Ignatius of Loyola and his spiritual exercises, which are built around a very specific model, a three-stage model: purgation, illumination, union. First, you get rid of the junk, that's your deconstruction. Then you see something you hadn't seen before, and you become one. Now, Bill Wilson visited a Catholic monastery just before he created the 12 steps. And the 12 steps are built on this exact model. The first four steps are purgation. Steps 5 through 10 are illumination. And steps 11 and 12 are union. I mean, the Jesuits, if this is what they practice, And so there is an intellectual purgation in part in The Dark Night of the Soul, but it's not the only thing that's there. But you have to go through it, according to John of the Cross, in two phases. First, he says, you have to come to the end of tactile sensory things where all food tastes like dirt. Nothing gives you pleasure. You're just, like Lauren said, you're just breathing. Okay. And then he says, then there's a spiritual purgation that has to go. And that includes all this false view of God stuff and questions. We have, the church has really failed us and in this, that they haven't taken the time to walk us from the purgation of ideas to illumination. They kind of dump us into purgation and say, "Here's your way out," and it's like that movie, The Maze. Well, geez, now you're in the 15th century trying to figure out the penitential system so that when you die, And John of the Cross is writing, by the way. He was born 4 years before Luther would die. Luther died 1546, John of the Cross born 1542. He's writing after, during, and after the Counter-Reformation Council of Trent, the rise of the Jesuits at that time too. So you guys were able to touch on all of the important parts of it in your little intro, and they're all found in this poem. So if I could ta have the pleasure, I would like to actually, it's very short, it shouldn't take more than a minute, to read the
Good.
eight little verses of this poem, remembering what he says. The first two stanzas are the two kinds of spiritual purgation. One, I'll number them, I'll say one, two, because there's eight of them. And then the rest have to do with the benefits that come. So check this out, It's called Stanzas of the Soul. One. One dark night, fired with love's urgent longings. Ah, the sheer grace. I went out unseen, my house being now all stilled. Verse two. In darkness and secure, by the secret ladder disguised. Ah, the sheer grace. In darkness and concealment, my house being now all still. Three. On that glad night, in secret, where no one saw me, nor did I look at anything, with no other light or guide than the one that burned in my heart. Four. This guided me, more surely than the light of noon, to where he waited for me. Him I knew so well, in a place where no one else appeared. Five. O guiding night, O night more lovely than the dawn, O night that has united the lover with his beloved, transforming the beloved in her lover. Six. Upon my flowering breast, whom I kept wholly for him alone, there he lay sleeping, and I caressing him, there in a breeze from the fanning cedars. Seven. When the breeze blew from the turret, parting his hair, he wounded my neck with his gentle hand, suspending all my senses. Eight. I abandoned and forgot myself, laying my face on my beloved. All things ceased. I went out from myself, leaving my cares forgotten among the lilies.
Beautiful.
Now
Wow.
that is the poem that John of the Cross will use that and explain it in his now more psychological slash spiritual way. So, for me, when I read that, what blew my mind was that the purgation part, which is for us the hardest part, going through a purging process is really hard. I mean, it's like the gospel is this worldview ayahuasca ceremony, and we're just vomiting out all these bad worldviews from having ingested the gospel, and that's what we experience, and it's not pleasant, man. It is just not pleasant. Any purging of anything, whether it's books, gosh, the thought of me purging my library is like, but the emphasis was so hopeful. And we need to, if we're going to talk about the dark night of the soul, we need to recognize, as he does, these deprivations that have to occur before the illumination can happen, where it is only the beloved, and you notice he doesn't say Jesus' name in there.
Yeah.
Right. And he uses a lot of that medieval mystical union. The charismatic Jesus is my boyfriend language,
I was thinking that when you were reading it, I'm going, it's kind of contradicts what we said last week, but
you know, there were more commentaries written on the Song of Solomon in the Middle Ages than any other book.
That's so interesting.
Over 1,000 commentaries written on the Song of Solomon. Because you can allegorize that in terms of Christ and the church, which they
Sure.
did.
Sure. Yeah.
Some went a little more personal, the soul with the divine, but they basically did what some of the charismatics
Yeah.
did. Jesus is my boyfriend isn't new.
While you were reading that, Michael, I was really meditating on the words, and it reminded me, and you just now made that connection, but it reminded me several years ago, I wrote a little booklet, whatever, actually preached on it a few times too, on 5 levels of emotional healing. The woman in Song of Solomon went through by her relationship. And the last one is so parallel to what you just read. And that's the second dream that she had, where she was already in bed and she hears a knocking at the door. And she's going through the rationale of I've already, made myself ready. I'm in my nightgown. I've washed my feet. Should I get up now and go answer the door for this guy? And she lays there, and then she, what the heck am I doing? This is my lover. And she goes, and he's gone. She goes out into the street, and the guards, who in the first dream tried to help her, this time they beat her up. And
Wow.
the virgins really begin to mock her, other virgins. And all of a sudden she says, oh, wait. I know where my lover is. He's in our garden. And, think about it. Okay. Night. She's in bed. She's
Yeah.
trying to be comfortable in that night.
Right.
But she becomes aware of the fact that she kind of pushed her lover out of her thinking, and then it's like, I don't want to do this. And she goes through all this and all the places that used to bring her comfort, used to help her, used to support her in her pursuit of this relationship,
Right.
are now beating her up. And then she comes to the revelation, the only place I'm going to find my lover is in our garden. And it's essentially it's how this poem that you read ended, Among the Lilies.
Right.
It's, that's
What did he say? Leave my something forgotten among the lilies. Let me just find that. That
Yeah.
was, it was,
But the gar our garden,
leaving my cares
yes.
forgotten among
Yes.
the lilies.
Because our garden is that deepest place of intimate relationship with
The Father.
the Trinity, the Father, the Lord, the Holy Spirit, however you want to say it, but really the Father, the one
Yes.
who loves us when everything else fails us.
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
That's spot on. You see, that's the gospel. That's the gospel.
Yes.
Yeah, wow. And I like how you pointed out, Jim, in the poem, pointed out, Michael, how that everything that before gave you comfort, that gave you comfort before, it no longer does. And now it's even hurting you. And man,
Yes.
that really stuck out at me because I was going, that parallels my own journey, where the things that I was, that before, this is how I follow Jesus, this is what I do, this is the way I live, those became the very things that turned around and were then later hurting me and causing me great pain. And then it's interesting how you talk about going to the garden in that season. Lily and I, we, you know how Eureka was a profound place where we met each other. I met Jesus, church's family, Jesus in a whole new way. We said, let's go back to Eureka. And we took a trip back to Eureka, rented a little house there. And that's where we found the Lord start speaking to us again. And so it's so interesting because it just parallels I think that really is a great descriptor of the dark night of the soul, and that the purging that goes on for us, I don't think it's always this way. A lot of times it seems to start with a thought. You start thinking something a little different. You start seeing something a little different. Sometimes that doesn't happen there. Sometimes it's not until you get to you're in the dark night of the soul and the purging is happening, like Michael shared, and then the light shines. But sometimes it starts with that you're seeing something a little different about Jesus that you didn't see before. And we would call that maybe the seed of deconstruction or whatever you start, but we think we're ready to run with it. I'm going to run with it in my current paradigm, in my current frame of mind. We don't realize you're headed right into a bulldozer, because you the what that new thinking is, that renewing of the mind requires you to change. You can't take the current way you are, the current status quo and your current way of thinking, and just adopt that into it, and cool, now I'm going to be a popular teacher or something, which, to be honest, that's kind of the frame of mind that comes in, when especially back in my days as a youth pastor, was cool, this as we said last week, that'll preach, and but we haven't lived it. It's not a
There's,
part of
yeah.
who we are. And that's, I see where the dark night of the soul begins, is all of a sudden this thought that we thought was like a cool thing, and now I can win arguments with it, or I can really preach a sermon with it or something. All of a sudden it's like, no, this has to now be applied. And the purging happens that you guys were talking about. Now the, like Lily loves to point out, it's like she always talked about those bad old Pharisees out there, and she loves to talk about how in that season, she discovered that's us. They are us, and so you, so yeah, and then, like you said, then comes that place of finding your lover, finding Jesus, finding the Father, in that place. But it's after it. It's so often after going down that street, the purging, going down that street, trying to return to all the things that brought you comfort before, and finding they don't work anymore. The formula, the thing I used to do, the way I used to think, it's just not working anymore. And there really is, like I said, I didn't use that end of the rope statement flippantly. I like how Eugene Peterson, that's how he translates, what is it, in the Sermon on the Mount, I'm forgetting the last one, blessed are the, is it poor in spirit? He says, he translates that, says, blessed are you when you're at the end of the rope. Because where there's less of you, there's more of me. And I think that's what it is sometimes we just, it takes getting to the absolute end of ourselves, where it all are, where all the things that we were so competent in, they're on the
Well,
trash heap now. I can't think, I can't work my way out of this one. I can't figure my way out of this one. I can't be genius enough to get this out of it. I can't heal my own hatred in this. I can't be nice enough to nice my
to
way
get
out of
worse.
this. I really For me, a part of it was the anger and the hate from the betrayal, you know, going through reaches such a level that it's like, I used to be able to just nice my way out of this or say some prayers and get out. But I really, really hate these people. Like really, before I started the podcast, Lily and I were just talking about how betrayal goes, when someone's just evil, they're evil. When somebody betrays you, they were your friend. It hits a whole different level of anger and hatred. And anyway, so all that just to say, you come to the end of yourself where you realize, I don't, like Peter, I'll never deny you, you know. I'll for love my enemies, you know. No. It's without Jesus, without transformation, it is not there.
Go ahead, Michael.
Well, no, I was just thinking that Lauren started with kind of the intellectual question, but then he quickly shifted back to the psychological. I want to hone in for a second on the intellectual experience of people in the modern world, you know, who A, doubt the existence of a God or whatever the questions they have when their God doesn't work. And they quit believing, so to speak, you know, because they pray God doesn't do anything. And so, you know, in order for that foundation to be crumbled, an intellectual foundation to be crumbled, there has to be an intellectual foundation. And there is. But the intellect behind it is Gnosticism. It's the thinking of Gnosticism. That's what ends up getting broken down when people go through that crisis. Because that Gnostic God never can do anything. Because that God doesn't exist.
Yes.
You know? And I think that that's a good thing for people to realize. You know, the Father is... It's
Michael,
not.
For our listening audience, can you very briefly explain Gnostic thinking or Gnosticism?
Gnosticism is a worldview from the, basically from the second century on, see, the second century CE on. It begins in the late first half of the first century. It probably has Samaritan origins, but it's a worldview that separates the spiritual from the physical completely. The two cannot meet. They can't touch. Matter is evil, spirit is good. And that the presumption behind that is we down here in the matter have forgotten our spiritual roots or our spiritual identity, but there are secrets that are given to the teachers, and they'll teach us the secrets, and then we can join them in this beautiful thing. It's based upon correct knowledge. That's why the word gnosis, which means knowledge, is used. It's the correct way to think about something, you know.
So would that include the concept of secular and sacred?
Yes, there's
my
that.
Job. My job is secular. Right. What I do at church is sacred.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That too. There's a dualism right there.
Okay.
Yeah. When everything Good. In your world is binary like that, it's a sure sign that your thinking is dominant, is shaped by Plato far more than it is Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely see that. I was just chewing on that because, like you said, any thinking also, like you see, correct me if I'm wrong, but that it's also there's like levels, like you said, the secret knowledge that we move up to another level, and you know, you're reaching a new plateau or something, and I like how you brought up the thing of like that, yeah, thinking there's secret knowledge, and then also the thing of like the belief in a Deus ex machina. You know, that,
right.
that the Superman Jesus is going to come in and rescue me. And I know for me, that was the huge part of the crisis was that, where's my rescue? You hit a point where you think, surely it won't go beyond this. You draw that line and you do. And you're like, wait a minute. It was supposed to happen by this point and it didn't. And you're still falling, you're still collapsing or whatever it is. But like you said, but it starts, but I like how you talk about the thinking, because your thinking does begin to change. That like you said, that non-existent Gnostic God begins to die, because either you have to go basically atheist, like what you see a lot of people do, they'll call it deconstruction, but it's like, I'm just, I went into a
I'm
crisis, God
done.
didn't show up, I'm done. Or you have to start rethinking the gospel, rethinking who the Father is, which this, I don't want to go heavy down this road because we covered in other podcasts, but that's where the cross really comes into play. Because you go, wait a minute, I need to take another look at this Jesus, this God who hung on the cross, because that doesn't fit with my Gnosticism, this God who suffers and dies.
Well, now you, unless you do what the Gnostics did. So they have just before Jesus is going to get nailed to the cross, the Christ spirit leaves him. And so it's only the human Jesus that suffers. In one of the Gnostic texts, the Christ spirit hovers above the human Jesus laughing.
Oh my
Because
gosh.
God can't suffer.
Right.
Because to
Right.
suffer is to change, and God is immutable. God cannot change.
Oh wow. Oh, but I love that statement you just said, to suffer is to change. Because it's like that was even the mystery of suffering. Is you go through something and it seems like nothing is happening.
I
You're
suffered
just,
a lot of diapers.
yeah, and you're going nothing. Okay, so I
The
lost
double
this.
entendre.
Yeah, it's like everything goes wrong, all this bad stuff happens, and you're not seeing any new lessons coming in. You're not seeing, because you're, well, you're gonna learn stuff. That Gnostic thinking, you're gonna go up a level, whatever. And all you do is come out of it and you step out of that smelling like crap, just everything's burnt to the ground, and you go, what the hell was that? And
So
then, but then, like you said, you change. You
it seems
find you
like
change.
it seems like there are two questions that are like one and two or two and one that come up almost immediately. The first one, which is what we were talking about when we start going through the type of thing that plunges us into that dark night of the soul, is the first one, what did I do wrong? And the second one is, where is God in this? And like I say, they can, those two questions can be in either order, but how many years did I spend as a pastor with people coming, and the first thing they ask is one of those two questions? And the sad thing is, until I begin to learn something, newsflash, pastors don't all know everything. until I begin to learn something, I would answer them. And I think about the answers that I gave, how ridiculous they were. Usually on the what did I do wrong? Well, maybe you didn't do anything wrong, but you probably need to increase your devotional life. You probably need to, And I struggled with the where is God in this? Because I had dejected the whole Job complex. And so, well, where is God in this? And so then the best answer I came up with is, I've seen it in memes, is the teacher always remains silent in a test.
That's
And
good.
it's like, Well, that does a lot of good for the person going through it. But I was also thinking, Michael, see if this fits. I was also thinking, here's the boys with Jesus, and they realize that, hey, we're coming to the whole purpose of this. We know this dude's the Messiah, and he's the long-awaited promise, and man, everything is beautiful. And he's saying, this is it, boys, this is the night. Make sure you bring a sword. All right, I knew it was going to come down to a fight. And then they go into the garden. And then Peter does what Peter does, and Jesus says, see, put that thing away. You know, if you, if he, other ways he says, if my kingdom was of this world, I would have told you guys to fight. I would have taught you how to fight. Don't you think I could call 10 legions of angels? It's for this purpose I came. Now they're really confused. And they all take off, all except John, who followed afar off. And they know that their promise, their Messiah, the one they thought it was going to happen that night, the revolution is going to begin, is now hanging on a cross. And I'm like, if that's not a dark night of the soul, I don't know what is. And what does Peter do? I know I'm rolling things quickly together, but Peter just says, ah, I'm going back to fishing. At least then I made some money on this deal. You know? But yeah.
Oh man, it's just so relatable.
So
Totally.
your two
Go ahead.
questions, what did I do wrong and where is God in this? There's just two very simple answers, and they are nothing and everywhere.
Yes.
Yes. That's it. There's just simple answers. Nothing. You did nothing wrong. Circumstances aren't a barometer of the Father's love. And where is God in this? God is everywhere. Just as he's all over the cross, even though you can't see it, God was in Christ reconciling the world to God's very self. But you can't see it.
Yes.
But to trust that that's what's happening, how do you do that? Well, you look at what Jesus said from the cross, you look at his life. Story. Yeah, Jesus, I want to just put to rest something. I don't believe Jesus quotes Psalm 22 on the cross as a way of believing that God has abandoned him and he's,
No.
his feelings are butthurt and stuff. The citation of Psalm 22 is to call this whole scapegoat mechanism to the mind of those that are standing there that would know the rest of the psalm, the Pharisaic and Sadduceic and other people. Perhaps some priests or whatever that were there. The problem that you have is that at that point you've got Jesus switching from Father to the Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, back to Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And Jesus never calls God God ever, 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 ever. In fact, one of the marks of Jesus' teaching is the use of the divine passive. Jesus could have said God this and this, but instead he uses circumlocutions like the kingdom of heaven. We don't need to have a Jesus that, went through some kind of enlightenment intellectual crisis on the cross. I think it's just silly. To
But
think.
I think what he was hitting on though with the disciples, going through that dark night of the soul because they had their expectations of what everything was going to look like, and Jesus all the way was trying to free them from that mentality. You see it over and over and
Yeah,
over.
I don't know they went through a dark night of the soul that Friday, Saturday, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I don't think that's a dark night of the soul. I mean, I think they're living in fear now of the authorities.
Very much
going
so.
through a
That
dark
makes
night of the
sense.
soul.
Yeah.
I think you could say the early church went through a dark night of the soul in 41. 41 was the Caligula crisis. It's when Paul's writing the Thessalonian letters. It's when James, the son of Zebedee, is martyred because the Romans had called back the Roman leadership there. I believe it was Pilate. They brought him to Rome. And whenever there was a vacuum, whenever the Roman leadership was called to Rome, that's when the local Jewish leadership there in Jerusalem took power and persecuted the Christians. And then the Romans would send somebody, and then the Christians would be Jewish Christians, and Jerusalem would be fine until they left. And so anyway, that's 41. 41's a bad time, hard time. And James gets murdered. Now there's no more concept of the 12. Now this belief that Jesus was going to return and these 12 were going to rule the 12 tribes, that's All
gone.
right.
That's gone.
Yeah.
That's when they have their dark night of the soul. That's when Paul has to change his thinking too, because the gospel can't die, right? But that worldview had to die and change.
Yeah.
So I would say that was the 41 was the early church's dark night of the soul.
That
I'm
makes
just
sense.
thinking on a level of the individuals. When you put your hope in something that's false, their hope was that the Messiah, because of a misunderstanding of prophetic scripture, their hope that the Messiah was going to come and deliver them from their immediate persecutors from Rome or whatever. So you have the two men on the road to Emmaus. They're pretty bum kicked. Jesus said, "What are you guys talking about?" He said, "Yeah, are you the only one that hasn't heard about, it's like,
Right.
and it's like to me, I try and put myself in that place, and I try and, I spent 3 years with this dude believing that he was getting ready to lead the revolution, because he kept talking about establishing his kingdom and we're his chief lieutenants, and then all of a sudden it's like, so I get what you're saying totally, and I don't disagree with it. Paul said at one time, he said, we were so discouraged that we despaired of life itself. That's pretty low,
That's pretty low.
So we all individually, at least for those two guys on the road to Emmaus, I would say it was a kind of a dark night of the soul for them. They were like, "We had our hope, but dude's dead now. And how many more thousands of years under persecution, under, armies coming in and capturing us, are we going to have to endure before this promised Messiah comes?"
They needed a lesson in hermeneutics, and that's what Luke says. Just says Jesus de-hermeneuing. He hermeneuticked the scriptures to them. He showed them how to read them. He
Yes,
gave them the frame. Said, "You
exactly.
guys got the wrong frame. You got to use this frame."
Right.
And that frame is the
Wow.
suffering servant of Isaiah. Use that frame. Now you're talking about a victim. What kind of victim? What about victims? Jesus was well aware that the way the Jewish scriptures were lined up at that time, not canonized, but lined up according to degrees of cleanness from the beginning to the end of that canon, is the murder of Abel and Zechariah, son of whatever his name is, Berechiah, there at the end of Chronicles. So Jesus was well aware this tradition was about murder, and his own life was reflected there, and he could point to it and say, "See."
And isn't that exactly the point of or the 3 points rather, of the poem that you read at the beginning.
What do you mean?
Well,
Purgation of
that
Living
what he was
Things?
doing, what Jesus was doing, changing their hermeneutic, is
Right.
the illumination.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
correct.
And then in the act of breaking bread, when their eyes were open,
Then it's union.
then it's the union.
But it's
Exactly.
not with the physical risen Christ. It's with
Correct.
the present Christ by the Spirit.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
They've even had to let go of the quote, historical Jesus in a sense.
Yes. Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah, I'm just.
I think it's really important to note that in the resurrection appearances, Jesus is not recognized. He appears as a total stranger
That's a
to
total,
everybody. And it's really important, when you're coming out of that dark night, as it were, the one who, quote, is there to save you doesn't look anything like you may think.
That's exactly it.
That is
That,
so
that's
true.
exactly right.
You have to be ready for that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that goes back to what we were saying about you come out changed. That's why you come out changed, because the one you
Yeah.
meet there is not the same one that you knew or thought you knew
Right.
when you went into it. That's exactly right. Wow. Yeah, because one thing I've seen is that when people go through that, I think a lot of times they don't notice the change until they notice their interactions with other people. They start noticing the way they interact with other people has changed. In the sense of something has changed inside of them. I'm not talking like, oh, now like Scrooge gets a visit from three spirits and now he's a nice guy. I'm talking about there's a well that gets dug in that place. And the way and your thinking changes. And when your thinking changes, your actions change. And the way you begin your vertical relationship, as we would say, your relationship with the Father, you see who he is, but in that revelation, that can't help but affect everything in your life. So that ends up affecting your relationships with other people.
It's one thing to believe that God loves you and accepts you. Oh, I believe that. Yeah. It's another thing to trust it on a deep, deep, innate level that no matter what, I know I'm loved. It's very different because there's people, they want to affirm that they believe love rules the universe, God's love, it's really good, da, 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 da. But when it comes down to that pressure cooker, when it comes down to that sifting of the dross in their life, purging the crap out of their life, whether it's sin, whether it's intellectual worldviews, it doesn't matter what it is, it's getting purged. They just don't want that. They don't understand that just like Jesus, we learn obedience through suffering.
Yes,
But
that's exactly
obedience to
it.
what? Obedience to what? Whatever the Father's will is. And it's not for us to say to the Master, this is what your will is going to be for me as a slave.
Right.
Took the form of a slave.
Yeah.
Learned
Yeah.
obedience through
Closer to
suffering.
me. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's the dark night of the soul. That's why we go through things. It's about the lessons. And when Jim said the teacher is silent during the test, that just wasn't something funny. That was profound.
Oh yeah,
And it's a kind of
absolutely.
Zen koan.
Yeah.
You know?
No, the reason I laughed is because I thought back to when I was a teacher when we did the state test. We weren't even allowed to look at our cell phones though. We had to walk the classroom and pay complete attention to the student. So it's like the teacher may be silent, but the teacher is really paying attention.
Oh yeah, sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
You mean he's not sitting at his desk reading comic books?
No. No.
Oh, what are the latest DEI instructions?
But no, I what we've all been talking about, and what you brought up in your last statement there, Michael, was it's so relevant right now because I'm watching just and I'm not, this isn't to turn this political. That's not where I'm going with this. I'm watching the discomfort in myself and so many people around me with the season we're all going through. And I wonder how much of it is me saying to the master, I don't like how you're transforming me. I don't like that I'm having to actually live and have worked into me the things that I have shared, spoke about, taught about loving my enemy, loving people who think differently, that I am a servant, because we talk about rugged individualism, you know, freedom, you know, I'm a servant, I'm a slave, you know, and I don't like embracing suffering. And having to, and a big one too is, oh, I'm an alien here. This world is not my home. You know, man, I'm sure got a lot of attitudes that say it pretty damn well is my home, and I'm gonna fight for it, you know. So anyway, all of that is to say that I'm seeing just my own resistance that's been coming up a lot lately to the Father and just daily things, daily little attitudes, daily things that are popping up all the time where it's like I'm resisting being on that potter's wheel. You know, because again, it was great to talk about it when the birds were chirping and the sun was out and everything was going my way. Hey man, love your enemy. You know, it's a whole different thing when your life is actually getting difficult, you know. So yeah, it's and but when you said the thing about being a servant, man, that hit me hard because it was like, that's our stance, and that goes against everything culturally I'm taught, you know, is you know, our heritage, especially as an American and my family heritage even that fought the Revolutionary Wars. No, we're freedom fighters. You know, we get rid of slavery. You know, we don't take on this the place of a servant.
I think what you're saying, Lauren, is so many of us are ruled by our perceptions,
Yes.
not by our faith, our
Exactly.
perceptions. And the Father is wanting to bring us to that third stage, to relationship. And it is, how can I say this? It's not easy.
It's not.
You know, depending on how able we are or willing we are to let go of human concepts, the idea that this dualism, well, I know that I'm a citizen of heaven, I have no permanent dwelling place on the earth, but right now I'm in America and that guy's ruining about my world, or whatever. That party, or whatever. Well, wait a minute. Didn't I, on another whole level, a few years back, go through a whole personal crisis that in the end, I came to a deeper understanding of my connection, of Father's love for me, of relationship? Then why am I fearing this situation? You know,
Yeah.
is it, I mean, if he takes care of the birds, isn't he going to take care of me? Didn't he the last time? And I think we grow in those things. I don't think we hopefully we only go through one dark night of the soul, but I'm not sure that's too true. But the lessons, we don't always learn it all in one, trial.
That's important. That's important.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah,
important.
that's exactly right. And yeah, there was something you had said, Jim, that it really jumped out to me, but it was that yeah, the dualism. It's going, if my thinking, if I don't move into following Jesus and the way the Father, Son, Holy Spirit showed we live, if I don't move into that, what hope is there? Because all it is going to be is just a continual thing of, if I, it's always when these people go, it'll be better. And we can't live that way. That we've been in that cycle in the world forever. And that's the thing that's been really hitting me is it's like my as Paul's terminology or what about the flesh, my flesh is suffering because it does not like letting go of that mentality. It's like I'm discovering I still want an enemy. But that's not gonna change a damn thing. Because that just keeps us trapped in the way things are. And I'm even seeing the thing of wanting a scapegoat. It's like wanting someone to put all the sins on to say that person, that group, they're the problem. And if they go away, I even saw it in a movie yesterday. And when the movie was like, yay, now everything's peaceful. And I was like, that was horrible. Yeah, you got rid of the person. So now all the people, it was like, that was no solution at all. That'll last you maybe 80 years until your next crisis.
Really.
So it's like we have to, and by we, I mean me, have to embrace that Jesus is our forgiving victim. And I can't play in this game anymore. So again, so I guess that's a little bit of like, you say you go through that dark night of the soul, but there's still the trials. There's still the thing of the unlearning. And so you can accept, have all the correct concepts and ideologies. But if it's not in your life, it's not part of your life, then it doesn't do you any good.
I think we're probably at time. Michael, tie all this together with a few closing thoughts, and then Lauren will take us out.
The point of the Bible is to teach us how to suffer. Not to avoid suffering, but how to suffer, how to change. And it is God who is at work in us, both to will and to do
So good.
that change, that transformation. It hurts. It hurts. It's painful. We could use the word soul crushing. You can use the metaphor of coal being pressurized into a diamond. There's many ways to talk about this. But the purpose and the point of life is to become beautiful.
That's cool. That's an awesome way to put that. Is yeah. It's like who was it? Somebody it might have been you, Michael. Somebody posted this week on Facebook. No, it was another friend of mine had made a statement about getting all mad, getting all angry. He goes, the only thing that's changing is you, in a negative sense. And that's the thing I'm looking at. I love that you put it in the positive, is that it's about becoming beautiful. And like you said, coal under
So
pressure
good.
becomes a diamond. And that's
So
what the
good.
Father's after. I love that. There's no better way to wrap this up. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. And anything new before we wrap up? Anything new going on with you guys? Any progress on books or anything like that?
The galleys for liberating the gospel are to come to me in May. And so I'll have my last chance to make any very small corrections. I don't know when the publication date will be after that. I would say within 90 days, perhaps by August, whatever. I haven't seen the artwork either. for the cover. Other than that, no, life is pretty cool. Just looking forward to spring very, very much.
Me too. I don't think I've ever had spring fever so bad in my life.
Lord. And it was a mild winter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, really? Not mild by comparison for Humboldt County. We've had some horrendous storms.
Oh, man.
There's something called a river in the sky or something like that, and
Yeah.
we've had three of them just since the first
Oh.
of the year. It's like,
Oh, man.
blow them right out.
Yeah. Yeah, and the
Really?
first time I ever had spring fever in my life was living in Humboldt County.
Yeah.
So people who think, oh, he's in California, what's he talking about? No, you gotta go live in Eureka for a while and live under cloud cover and fog for, 9 months straight, and you'll be singing a different song and
That's
dance,
right. That's
especially
right.
when the sun is
Really?
out.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, anyway,
Yeah,
thanks everybody.
it can be 30 outside, but if the sun's out, you're out
No,
on your
yeah.
front
That's
porch.
I remember feeling so guilty on days that I couldn't get out whenever the sun's out. It's like the sun's out. I have to be out there.
Yeah,
Anyway,
exactly.
thanks for
All
tuning
right,
in,
guys.
everyone, and we'll talk to you all next time.